All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the post-council meeting to begin. First, I'd like to thank Director of Public Safety Bob Flowers of Santa Clara Ivins DPS for hosting the meeting here today. This is a nice facility. I'd like to welcome new members of the council. We have Dr. Frank Budd, who is returning from a sabbatical off of the council. Dr. Budd served previously, I believe, 8 years on post-council, of which 4 years were as chairman. So welcome, Frank. Glad to have you back. With that, we'll move to our agenda items. Sheriff Edmonds and Sheriff Tracy are en route here from a previous meeting. Chief Burbank will be teleconferencing and has not come online yet, but we'll know when he is here. We do have one excuse. Member Bruce Bailey could not make it today. So for that, I'll now move to the approval of our December 6th, 2013 minutes. You've all been provided a copy. Welcome, Chief Burbank. Chris, are you there? I'm sorry, could you step over and speak so council can hear what you're saying?
This is as good as we can actually get the audio. Is it?
That's much better. We can hear now.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes. Softly.
Okay. Well, I've been accused of speaking softly, so I'll try to speak louder. This is about as good as we're going to be able to get it, sir, because of the technology that we have here with us today. So we will try to speak loudly without creating the feedback that we're now hearing. Okay, Chief Burbank, are you online? All right. Well, I'll come back to the approval of the December 6th, 2013 minutes. I need a motion.
Make a motion. We move to approve.
Thank you, Director Cook.
Second.
Chief Carpenter, second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Our next item of business is a Satellite Academy request, which will be handled by Deputy Director Kelly Sparks.
Thank you, Chairman Keefe, council members. We have received a request to establish a new satellite academy at the Utah State University Eastern in Price. That university, formerly known as the College of Eastern Utah, is now associated with Utah State University Price. The governing rule establishing or governing an establishment of a new satellite academy is R-728-401. Which requires several things, first being that there be a demonstrated need. Within that rule states that a satellite academy can only operate or only be established if there's not another academy operating within a 30-mile radius. The nearest academy to Price would be the Utah Valley University Academy, which is approximately 80 miles away. Also, in establishing a demonstrated need, the academy needs to show support from the local law enforcement. USU Eastern has received 3 letters of support for establishment of an academy at Price. Those letters are from the Carbon County Sheriff's Office, the Emory County Sheriff's Office, and the Price City Police Department. We also must have approval of a satellite academy director. If approved, this academy would be under the direction of M. Scott Henry. Mr. Henry is here. I'll invite him up to join me at the podium. Mr. Henry is currently an associate professor in criminal justice. He has a master's degree in administration of justice and security. He was actively engaged in Utah law enforcement for 21 years, served with the Carbon County Sheriff's Office from 1985 to 1992. And with the Department of Corrections APNP from 1992 to 2005, His last 5 years, he served as a regional administrator for APNP. Finally, his course validation. Post has worked closely with the College of Eastern, or with the Utah State University Eastern. Eventually, I'll get that right. For many months, preparing for this proposal, we've provided them with the operating policy, guidelines, and curriculum, and have had many discussions about the requirements to operate a satellite academy. We have reviewed the initial course schedules prepared by Mr. Henry and confirmed that all curriculum requirements are accounted for. Myself and Lieutenant Brewer conducted a site visit to inspect the facilities, including classroom facilities, defensive tactics training area, physical fitness facilities, and firearms range. We found the facilities and the equipment to be satisfactory in all regards. Post believes that the establishment of a satellite academy in the eastern region of the state would greatly benefit law enforcement in that area. We believe that USU Eastern is capable and prepared to operate a satellite academy, and we are supportive of their requests. And I would turn some time over to Mr. Henry.
Thank you. Thank you, Captain Sparks. It's a great opportunity for us out in eastern Utah. I think many of you know, having been leaders of law enforcement, the great challenge for getting officers trained. We feel this is a great opportunity with the Bridgerland Academy pulling out of the Uinta Basin some years ago for us to extend that opportunity back out in that area, as well as reach down now towards Moab. So we appreciate you taking our proposal on. Do you have any questions of me?
Or any questions of either of us? All right, thank you.
Scott, does this require a vote of the council? Or is this something new? All right, this will require a vote of the council, so not seeing any discussion on the matter, do I have a motion to, in relationship to the new academy?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the request of the College of Eastern Utah, Utah State University Eastern, to host and facilitate a satellite academy.
Thank you, Chief Longtime. Is there a second?
I second.
Commissioner Gibson, thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? All right, next item on the agenda is the annual and quarterly report we presented by Lieutenants Acosta and Brewer.
Members of the council, thank you very much. Distinguished guest. Just to give you a highlight of what we've been doing over the last year in investigations, we have opened up, we have received 176 complaints of misconduct in our office. Of those 176 complaints, we opened up 108 investigations. So it's quite a few. We investigated incidents of, let's see, let me make sure, I'm catching up, sorry about that. In 2013, the investigation section presented 39 cases to the Post Council for possible sanction. Of those 39 cases, there was 7 peace officers that were revoked and 29 officers were suspended. They also received 2 letters of caution. Some of the most frequent cases that we received were driving under the influence, theft cases, domestic violence, lying on post application, disorderly conduct, and lying under Garrity. Okay. During that time frame, we did 912 background investigations for applications for peace officers and 120 background investigations for dispatchers. So that's what we did for 2013. So far to date, since the last council meeting, we have received 41 investigations or complaints. We opened up 32 investigations. We have closed 1 case without any action after we opened up, we looked into the matter and we have closed it out. We had 4 voluntary relinquishments, and of those voluntary relinquishments, we had sexual conduct on duty, sexual conduct with a minor, custodial sexual misconduct, and falsifying government records. We had 120 applications that we reviewed, and currently we have 62 active investigations, and there's 108 of them are total what we currently have on our books. Of those 108, 62 are actually active. The rest are in some stage of a process. Either they're going to ALJ or they're looking at the hearing waiver and the notices to see what they're going to do with these cases. Any questions for investigations? Thank you.
Good afternoon, council members. So the annual report for the training section for 2013, 85 in-service training programs were conducted on 15 different topics. And these trainings were attended by 1,057 officers statewide. Six basic training sessions were conducted at posts and 139 individuals certified as law enforcement officers. The total number of peace officer certifications issued by post in 2013, and this also included trainings at post, Utah Department of Corrections, and all other satellite academies combined, were 565 special function officers, 324 correctional officers, and 415 law enforcement officers. So that's for the year of 2013. For the first quarter of 2014, post started and is in session with two classes right now. Class 306 started on January 6th. We started with 33 officers, 33 cadets, and 29 passed the special functions block. They are currently in the law enforcement block, that same class, with 38 cadets. 307 started March 3rd, and it started with 12, and we are currently at 11 in the special functions block. One did remove themselves for personal reasons. On the in-service training side, we had 25 in-service classes, trained a total of 328 officers, and a total of 312 hours of training were conducted in the first quarter. Any questions on training or the report?
Do you just want to move to the crisis intervention assessment report?
Yes, I'm prepared for that. So as you recall, in 2000, the last meeting in December, we recommended the council to create a subcommittee to look at the feasibility of being able to put the crisis intervention training into the post curriculum. This committee was made up of Dr. Matt Checkitz, Director Roland Cook, Chief Greg Butler, and Sheriff Todd Bonner. We met, and some of the items that we discussed and we considered were, obviously, what can we do? How can we put the CIT training into this curriculum? Basically, that would have added a week, and really, that's not the issue. Time was not the issue. Another thing that we met, and we actually did meet with the people who are responsible for administering the CIT curriculum, and talked with them about the feasibility of doing this, and it was determined that it's not really feasible to put this curriculum and make all brand new cadets statewide CIT training certified, and there's a few reasons why. The biggest reason is being able to administer it. If we were to do that, there would not be a way to effectively administer this program statewide because of the way that they train and the way that they administer that program. It would be too big of a burden, not only for instructors, but for the healthcare system that's across the state. Because a part of this, the main part of that program is to go into healthcare facilities, mental health facilities, and interact with individuals, do site visits. What we decided we should do is recommend, in lieu of this 40-hour certification course, that we bolster the current curriculum that we have, which is called Introduction to the Crisis Intervention Team Training, no longer call that, and basically create and add to that program or that class and call it something like Introduction to Abnormal Psychology Mental Health. And we would be able to develop that with current POST resources. Dr. Checkitz and Director Cook indicated that we definitely have enough resources that as we move forward with this, that it would be feasible to do something like that. And once we looked at the curriculum, we noticed that there's not a class that in the special functions block that has something where it talks about this is what is abnormal psychology. This is the basic roots of introducing cadets to abnormal behavior and behaviors that they're going to encounter. So we felt like this is an area we do definitely need to bolster. So whether it's 8 hours or we feel like we can do it, we need more time. The time is not the issue. The issue is bolstering that part of the academy to make sure that officers have what they need to come out on the street and then recognize these behaviors and then react appropriately. And I would like to invite Dr. Checkitz and Roland to weigh in on this, because we've had a few very good lengthy discussions and really picking the brains of these folks with the CIT group of making sure that are we making sure that we have covered everything as far as CIT, and is there any possibilities with getting into the academy? So,
Matt, do you want to start, or do you want me to?
Go ahead.
I'll give my 2 cents. These were tremendous meetings, and I think the thing we came out of it is that we obviously need to have more training in these areas. Our officers that are entering their jobs need this type of training, need it to be available to them prior to hitting the streets or hitting our correctional facilities. However, just as Chief Brewer mentioned, it's so many resources are required to put on a CIT academy that's going to make it very difficult for us to get all the academies through. However, we did go through a lot of different information that we're going to be able to provide and take from CIT to be able to provide our new cadets the proper training that they need, including role plays. Any of you that have been in that CIT academy or been through that training, that is one of the key things where they actually get a chance to participate in a situation that they could face either on the street or in our correctional facilities. That's a quick overview that, again, it was important to us, and Matt brought in some great ideas as far as how we can utilize some of the information CIT is bringing to us later on down the road.
I would add to this that we also identified that CIT is designed as a training process for officers. So they have a preference to train officers at a later point after they've had experience. So I would distinguish to some extent the difference between professional training for officers and also just education for cadets. So as we looked at it, we felt like that education for cadets in the area of abnormal psychology and basic mental health would really give them one more tool as they move into being a new professional. So,
if I might just add one last component, we even took current curriculum such as recognition and response to excited delirium. We said, now is this something that we need to go ahead and combine with this future class? And Dr. Checkitz brought up a really great point. He says, no, that's a police component. What we need is the separate, more scholastic side of that, and keep those separate. We don't want to take that away, because that's still something important that officers need to recognize and know how to respond to, but it was enough to get that, to make sure that we understood there's a distinguishing separation that needs to make sure that we keep in the current curriculum and not try to go in and combine everything that was related to any kind of mental health issue and put it all into one. So,
are you ready to make a recommendation as to how many additional hours or which courses will be combined into this new curriculum?
Yes, we are. Minimum of 8 hours, and we would like to be prepared for the June post-council meeting to present something along with the curriculum for the council to review and possibly approve for next year's curriculum that starts in July. So that would be the recommendation that the committee came up with.
I appreciate the work that the committee's put on it, because I know I've spoken with several members. I'm still concerned that 8 hours may not be sufficient. In my own department, we are constantly dealing with individuals in mental health crisis. It's a daily basis, or a daily occurrence, and I'm just not sure that 8 hours, in addition to other courses that are more law enforcement related, is sufficient for our new officers, especially officers in the rural part of the state that may not face these issues as often as those of us along the Wasatch Front. That's purely speculation on my part. Sheriff Smith could probably address that better than I, but you know, it's a skill that if you don't use it, you're probably going to lose it. And I just can't see 8 hours. You know, when we first talked about this, nobody had a problem with extending 40 hours of the academy to prepare officers to deal with this. It's just not a Utah problem. It's nationwide. I recently read an email in Canada. Canada's facing the same thing, and the Ontario Provincial Police has identified that as the number one policing problem that they're dealing with. So I think that we really need to take a really hard look as far as 8 hours being sufficient. I understand the logistical difficulties of a full-blown CIT class. That's something I think that we're going to have to do in our own departments, but I think we can better prepare these young men and women that are going to be out there dealing with these people more than 8 hours. Yeah.
Can I speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Wade, and, we agreed. We thought the eight was the very minimum, and that is really just getting through the initial curriculum. We believe that there needs to be the same things such as role plays, such as experiencing. When CIT has a situation where you actually can, you have to go through, listen to someone, what they would normally hear, hearing voices. So there's a lot of things that can add to that. So all I really wanted to add was the minimum was 8 hours, just to be able to have an understanding of what's going on, and then be able to put some of them through some role plays that will prepare them for when they initially get in there. So we're definitely open for more than 8 hours.
I don't think anyone felt that, you know, eight hours was certainly the minimum. The issue became that the CIT training seemed to me to be a police officer-specific training for advanced officers. So the issue of time, I don't think anybody would take, you know, have any concern about 40 hours a week or 40 hours of training. The main thing was we identified, to some extent, a need that's being underserved in basic education at the academies. So.
And a philosophy that CIT has that Matt's talking about is that it needs to be a seasoned officer. So if we're going to do it, it's going to be something we build. We choose to build from our own curriculum.
Well, and the only fallacy I see with that philosophy is I don't get to pick and choose which one of my officers on an initial response is handling somebody that's having a mental health crisis. It could be somebody that just graduated from the academy, came out of my FTO program, or it can be somebody that's worked for me for 25 years. The 25-year guy is going to have CIT training. The new officer is not. So, you know.
But you understand. I think what we're trying to. We said those very same things to him. What we run into though is CIT is a. I don't know if you'd use the word company, but it's copyrighted, and they have a belief that that's the way that they do their training. So we got it after we talked to them. We said, okay, we can see we're going to have to build our own, and it can be anywhere from 8 hours to 40 hours if we want it to be.
Right. And I understand that, Director Cook. Yes, it does, and I understand that. It's just whatever we come up with in response to my question, Director or Lieutenant Brewer indicated 8 hours, and to me that's not enough. I'm glad that the committee is open to expanding that beyond 8 hours, and perhaps it won't be under the auspices of CIT, but something that the post staff develops in consultation with them that'll better prepare those officers to do the job they need to do until we can get them through CIT training at a later time, which is difficult for some agencies to do because of resources.
I would just add one more thing. Had CIT said that they were happy to train new cadets, we would have been happy to accept that.
So maybe the recommendation is we don't tell you in actual hours. Let us develop it. If it turns out to be 2 days, 3 days, then we'll be able to know what it is. Once we have the curriculum laid out and some objectives built and some good, solid course goals for the council to review and the sub-curriculum to review, because we all agreed we wanted to send it out and still amongst our subcommittee and make sure that everybody was good with this and this was the direction we were going to continue forward, then we can present that to you at the next meeting.
I think that's fine. Sheriff Edmonds, did you have comments?
All I was going to say is I agree with you, Mr. Chairman. I think that we could expand the number of hours that we're spending. There's always a concern that we're going to add additional hours to what a cadet has to go through at post, and I know that there's been a lot of concern voiced in that regard. But perhaps there are other things that we're doing that could be reduced. Maybe we need to take a comprehensive look at that, and we can spend some more time on this particular issue and less time on others.
Council, bear in mind that we have several scenarios that deal with people that are experiencing mental illness in the program as well. That's on top of the hours that would be recommended by the committee.
Any other comments from the council? All right, Lieutenant Brewer, boy, you're on a roll today. You get the next agenda.
Middle of the meeting, sir. I believe the next item is satellite training audits. So I would like to segue into this segment just by describing what takes place during an audit. So there was two audits that were conducted this quarter. The first audit was conducted with the Utah Department of Corrections, who is responsible for not only running the special functions officer block, but also the basic correctional officer block. So what I do and what we're doing now is we request all academies' schedules, and those schedules come to us via through our technicians. And first thing I do is review that schedule, make sure all the curriculum is present, and then I go through it. If there's any questions I have, I contact that satellite training academy director and then ferret out any issues with that. Then I have a formal meeting where we sit down and we go through all the line items that we have. Are we receiving their applications in a timely manner? Is there any issues with that? Is there any issues with any of the skills training, such as firearms or defensive tactics or anything like that? We'll go out and observe the training as well. So this quarter, when I observed Utah Department of Corrections, it was brought to our attention last fall that actually the new training director is Scott Crowther. He has a need for more defensive tactics instructors to be able to do more in-house training. So he requested through this process that Post put on a defensive tactics training instructor course, which we obliged him, and we just finished that last week. Actually, it was 2 weeks ago. So we went ahead and did that, looked at everything else with the corrections group, and found that they are there were no exceptions to the audit. We'll like to make a side note that we are working with the Department of Corrections to update the basic correctional officer curriculum so it matches the special functions officer and the law enforcement officer block, meaning it's formatted the same way that the post curriculum is. It just made sense to do that, and Department of Corrections was willing, and they actually came to us and said, we want it to all look the same. And this will actually help the satellite programs as well, because there are at least two and maybe a third that are going to be teaching that basic correctional officer block in their academy. So this just makes sense when the cadets see that it's not a different curriculum, it's all the same. So we are working with them on that. Any questions regarding the audit for corrections, Department of Corrections, satellite training program? Okay, move on to the Salt Lake City. So like I said, I review the schedule, and I noticed when I reviewed Salt Lake City's schedule, there was just a few minor issues with that. So when I called up their training lieutenant and asked him about these issues, it was that they were using old curriculum numbers on the schedule, and it just was a copy and paste issue. Also noticed that prior to them taking the special functions officer defensive tactics test, they only had Salt Lake City defensive tactics on the schedule. So I questioned them about that. I asked Lieutenant Vance Lance Van Dognan with Salt Lake City, and he indicated that at the same time that they teach the post curriculum, they teach Salt Lake City curriculum along with that. So I was okay with that, and I asked him if I could come out and observe the defensive tactics test, and I did so with Sergeant Glenn Perret. So we went to their training facility, and we went there on the afternoon of the test and observed them. I didn't have a critical enough eye to pick up what was going on during this test, so I rely on Sergeant Glenn Perret, and he indicated that there was some issues with the test. So we talked to the training lieutenant, expressed our concerns, and it turns out that they had only had 4 hours of post-defensive tactics prior to administering the post-certification. So I was concerned. That was an issue, and it was an exception to the audit. So that got me digging a little bit further into their schedule, and it turns out that they apparently had felt like there was enough crossover between the Salt Lake City defensive tactics that the cadets could essentially pass the post certification exam, which was not the case. There should have been at least two, possibly three, that failed that defensive tactics certification exam that did not fail it. So to fix that, we went ahead and came up with a plan of action with Salt Lake City that post instructors were going to retest this class. Took place 10 days later, and they came to the Post Academy, retook the test, and they passed with flying colors. That's after they put the required amount of hours into the post-defensive tactics portion of that. This audit is going to be an ongoing because the class is still in session right now. So next week we will go and observe how they test their law enforcement officer block training. Sergeant Perret is already scheduled to go do that and observe to ensure that the post-curriculum is being administered properly. And then we are going to then go ahead and work with the Salt Lake City Police Department with their fall class as well. So instead of just when something like this comes up on the audit, instead of just saying that we're going to just audit them the one time, this caused me to indicate to the director that I would like to go out there and closely monitor their fall class as well, just to make sure that this problem is not going to come up again. Any questions regarding the Salt Lake City audit?
Okay, thank you, Lieutenant Brewer.
Okay, is that it for my
That's portion? It.
All right, appreciate that.
Okay, our next item is a legislative update by Director Stevenson.
Thank you, Chair, Council. This year, Post had a couple of bills to help clarify some of the language and intent in the statute. House Bill 270, which was sponsored by Representative Greenwood, did clarify the requirements so that somebody would be allowed to waive. Before, all it required is that they be sworn and not certified but not sworn. I added the additional language of certified and sworn because a couple times a year I get a call from somebody who's been out of the profession for 4 years or more, and they just want to waive in. And they make an argument that they've been in a like profession, therefore should count as being actively engaged in the performance of law enforcement duties. So I believe that this language, by adding the sworn piece, clearly identifies that somebody has to be employed by a law enforcement agency to meet that requirement of being actively engaged, therefore would eliminate the possibility or argument of being actively engaged in a like profession. Any questions about that bill? Next bill was House Bill 295, also sponsored by Representative Greenwood. This in the weapons chapter 7610.523, it provides an exemption for law enforcement in certain areas of the code. I did not see that that was a requirement or needed for law enforcement, and so we eliminated that exemption and left it as it, in the performance of their duties, then they would be exempt from certain firearms laws. Any questions about that bill? And then the final bill, House Bill 372, which was the reporting requirement bill, which is now an interim study, because there were some good questions that needed to be answered, and I needed some input. And I presented at the roundtable this morning, and I'm going to present again to this council that I just want feedback and input into the making or creating a backbone for the existing law, if you will. In 536211, it's a requirement that if there is a violation of state or federal law, it needs to be reported to POST, regardless of the departmental sanction administered on the officer. The bill proposed that there was a 90-day time frame in which the chief administrator would be required to report, and also added a Class C penalty to not reporting. There were some concerns about that. My intentions are not to arrest chiefs and sheriffs, much to somebody's opinion or a few, but it's to create a consistent reporting to POST in officer misconduct across the state. There are some areas that are very good, some areas that we can improve on. So that is the intent behind this bill, and I'm, again, availing myself to you for feedback and input, not necessarily right now, but please reach out to me in an email or phone call. Any questions about that? Okay. I'd like to this time to introduce some new members of our team. We have Rob Bench. We did an open recruitment, and he bubbled to the top. He comes from DPS, and he will be our fifth investigator. We've been behind in investigations, so we threw additional resources at this bureau, and I was sick of hearing Lieutenant Costa complain. So. And then I'd also like to introduce Marcus Yockey. He's an additional representative from the Attorney General's office, which I'm ecstatic about. We still have Kevin Bolander, who will be counsel for the council, and Yockey will be delivering the disciplinaries in front of the council. However, there is one case that will be a little unique this meeting, and Kevin Bolander will explain. Also, I'd like to mention that we secured $400,000. The predicament that POST budget has been due to the lack of performance of the surcharge account. And this year is no exception. In fact, we are projected to finish even deeper in the red. I want to thank Commissioner Squires for his support and his guarantee that he would make POST budget whole. He said that last March, and he has upheld his word. I also want to thank Colonel Fuhrer. We were in a bind with investigations. We get 2 times a year, we get flooded with applications. These investigators do an awesome work. Over 1,000 applications and backgrounds are conducted by that unit, plus the caseload they have. And we were drowning. I saw the deer in the headlight look with the investigators. And I called Colonel Fuhrer, and I said, hey, I need guys. We need somebody to come review these applications for us. And he stepped up to the plate and threw some resources my way. And I thank him for that. Any questions about budget? Bills, any of my hobbies, anything? All right, thank you.
Thank you, Director Stevenson. Our next agenda item is the disciplinary actions. Mr. Yockey, I believe we're going to hear the Corona case first, so Mr. Bolander will actually present that case. Chief Burbank, have you joined the meeting? Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Council. And just some more clarification on this new procedure. The reason we've decided, and now that we have two attorneys, we've decided it would be probably the best interest in POST and the POST Council to have one attorney represent Post at during the administrative proceedings and during the screening of the disciplinary cases, and then have the other attorney represent the council and answer their legal questions at these meetings. And the reason being is that way we don't get a situation where the same attorney who helped litigate a case on behalf of Post is now advising the council on that very same case. And so that's kind of the reasoning behind it. This is the one exception because this was a case that I represented Post on, and so that's why I'm presenting this case today. Marcus, who you just met, has not had any involvement with this matter, so he will be available if the council has any legal questions during your deliberations. All right, our first matter today is Chastity Corona. She is a dispatcher currently employed by Unified Police Department. The sustained allegations are driving under the influence and open container in a motor vehicle. This would be a category D and E in the disciplinary category guidelines. As a summary, on February 5th, 2012, Ms. Corona went with her friends and relatives to two local bars. She admitted to consuming alcoholic beverages at both bars. After leaving the second bar, Ms. Corona drove her vehicle to an eating establishment where she was pulled over by police for speeding. The officer determined through field sobriety tests and a chemical breath test that Ms. Corona was under the influence of alcohol. Corona's breath test indicated a .151. In addition, Corona was found to have a open container of alcohol where the seal was broken off the bottle. On October 23rd, 2013, an administrative hearing was conducted. The ALJ ruled Post met its burden of proof regarding the DUI and the open container. And just as a note, in your packet, you'll see there was actually two rulings. There was a finding of facts and conclusion of law, which go to the allegations. And then there was an additional order because Ms. Corona and her counsel raised some constitutional arguments to have the disciplinary matter dismissed. In that ruling, the ALJ ruled that he did not have jurisdiction to rule on the constitutional issues.
Any questions for Mr. Bolander? Is Ms. Corona's legal representatives online?
I represent Chastity Corona, and she's here with me. Can you hear us okay?
Hey, everybody. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. Let us know if you can't hear us. Chastity is going to give a statement to the council, but first I just want to bring up a housekeeping matter, and that being what Mr. Bolander just explained. We had raised issues of constitutional issues based on the statute violating Ms. Corona's constitutionally protected equal protection and substantive due process rights. I'm not going to re-argue that here, but I just want to make clear that by appearing before the council today, we are not waiving those rights. And having said that, Chastity is going to give a statement, and then I'll follow up with her.
All right, sir. Thank you. Ms. Corona?
Hi, I apologize for not being present there in St. George. I've had some financial difficulties getting there. However, I would like to thank the Post Council for letting me speak today. I'm a little nervous, so just bear with me. I was hired on with the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office, which is now the UPD, in May of 1998. I worked for the office for over 15 years. On February 4th, 2012, was the worst day of my life. I will never forget that day. I drove drunk and was arrested for a DUI. Not only did I put the public at danger, but also myself and my career. Just prior to that DUI in November of 2011, I went through a medical procedure called a gastric sleeve surgery. This was advised by my doctor. I went through this to lose weight because I was severely obese and tried to get a handle on some health issues. After surgery, my diet consisted of liquids and broth soups. On February 4th of 2012, I was allowed to eat, actually just February 1st, I was allowed to eat and drink normal foods. On the day that I went out, I did not realize how the alcohol would affect me with my smaller stomach along with my weight loss. On the night of the DUI, I didn't eat much, and I didn't realize that I wasn't okay to drive. Over the past 2 years, I have been very... I've been very regretful, sorry. I've taken responsibility for what I've done. I have worked for the UPD, like I said, for 15 years. And in this past 2 years, I have worked diligently every day. I work overtime. I've worked over 40 hours. My life has changed. I've tried to make a change in my life within these 2 years for the better from this mistake that I've made. I used to go to work, come home, maybe, you know, go to a party here and there. Now I don't do that. I work as much as I can. I don't go out. I try to train people at work. I try to be more invested at work. I think I maybe took my job for granted. Excuse me, hold on. Home-wise, I feel like I'm a healthier person. I've taken better care of myself and how I live my life. I don't need to drink, to have a good time, to celebrate, to go to celebrations. I've come closer to God by just His guidance and prayer. I do feel that I have let down UPD. And maybe my family. But I want that. I hope that I can get that respect back because I really do admire the Unified Police Department and I take full responsibility for what I've done. They have been my brothers and sisters there at UPD and they have helped me get through this difficult time. I feel like a changed person. I'm not a party girl. I'm a girl that wants to keep her 15-year career. I'm a girl that just wants to continue a 15-year career. I do take responsibility for what I've done. I am sorry. I'm sorry to Post Council. I'm sorry to UPD, and I'm sorry to my family. I'm sad that I have to be here and testify and talk about this kind of stuff, but I would hope and pray that you could see mercy on me, and I would ask the Post Council if they can see a lighter sentence in my case. And I thank you for listening to me.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Corona. Mr. Thorne, did you have comments you'd like to make, sir?
I do. I want to give a little background information and kind of explain some what I perceive as some mitigating evidence with regard to her sentencing. As Ms. Corona said, She made a mistake. She drove drunk and she was arrested. She has been very forthcoming with this process. She immediately notified her chain of command. She has been upfront with Post. She has never tried to hide what she did. She knew what she did wrong, and she admitted it. You know, something that the council should consider, this was an off-duty arrest. She was not working. She was driving her own personal vehicle. Nobody was injured. Nobody was hurt. There was no property damage. You know, and as Ms. Corona said, this happened after a gastric sleeve surgery, which reduced her stomach. This has the effect, when you shrink your stomach, your absorption rate changes. This was the first time she had been out since her surgery a couple months before, the first time she had consumed alcohol, and you know, she admittedly made a mistake and consumed too much alcohol, didn't realize the effects, you know, the change in effects that her size of her stomach now had on her. You know, throughout this process, she's been honest with the Internal Affairs Department, with Post. UPD could have terminated her, and they chose not to. They disciplined her, but chose to retain her. She's been internally disciplined. She learned from her mistakes. Over the last 2 years, it's been over 2 years since her DUI, and she continued working throughout those 2 years, and she has been an excellent dispatcher. In fact, she just received a performance evaluation recently that noticed she was an excellent dispatcher. She's had no discipline whatsoever in the past 2 years with regards to her UPD career or in the, you know, criminal area. You know, in fact, not only has she not received discipline, she's received accommodation and awards. If some of you may remember, there was the triple homicide in Midvale, and Ms. Corona was the dispatcher that handled that case, and she received accommodations for her handling of the matter. Most importantly here, we respect this process. We respect that Post needs to keep track of, you know, what goes on with its certified officers and dispatchers. We respect this process. We request that you, you know, take into consideration these mitigating circumstances. Importantly here, Unified Police Department, they want to keep Ms. Corona as a dispatcher. Unfortunately, in this situation, UPD has a policy where they require their dispatchers to be post-certified. Now, that's not a requirement, as you know, under Utah code. There are approximately 12 agencies throughout the state that do not require post-certification. Unfortunately, UPD happens to be one. And had they not had that policy, they would keep her on. But in this situation, if Poe suspends her, she is not going to be she won't be able to continue her career with UPD. You know, an interesting issue here is we've got Poe's counsel, you have the authority to suspend and revoke. I would also like you to take into consideration when you're doing this that Ms. Corona is a dispatcher as opposed to a police officer. And I know she's required to have public respect and, you know, safety issues, but she's not out driving a car. She's not out arresting people. And I think the discipline should be taken into consideration that she's not a police officer. And to our knowledge, there has not been a single dispatcher that has been disciplined by Post for a DUI. You know, again, we do respect this process. We hope that you take this into consideration. I am aware that you received a letter from Sheriff Winder, and there was three other letters that I sent to Post today. I apologize, they were late. I'm going to briefly just read a few statements from a couple of these letters that come from the chain of command. The first one is from Lieutenant John Barker, who is the Wasatch Command at UPD. and I'm just going to read a couple excerpts from each of these letters. It says, Chaz has admitted that she made a terrible mistake. Since that time, she changed her lifestyle. She has handled numerous situations where a calm voice helps people who are in distress over bad accidents, domestic problems, and many other high situations. As a watch commander for the UPD, I deal with all of the dispatchers on a day-to-day basis and find Chaz to be very competent in her work. I would ask that she be afforded a little compassion and leniency so she could continue as a dispatcher. Respectfully, Lieutenant John Parker. The dispatch personnel executive Shelley DeJong also wrote a letter. I want to read a couple of statements from there. She says, since her DUI charge, I've seen many changes in Chaz. She has matured a great deal. Chaz has gone from a person more geared to having fun to putting her nose to the grindstone. She often talks to people about her mistake and the mistake of drinking and driving. This has been a costly mistake for Chaz, both monetary and personal, one that I just about guarantee won't happen again. She has revolved from someone who let herself be led to one who has taken control of her life and found her strength. We all make mistakes, but the difference with her and some others is she has learned and evolved. I ask that she be given the chance to continue to flourish and help others. Dispatch Supervisor Chris Dunn also provided a letter, which I think is important to read as well. I'm writing this letter on behalf of Chastity Corona. Chaz has been a dispatcher with the Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office, UPD, for the past 15 years. I've personally worked with her for the past 7 years when I joined the organization. I have found Chaz to be an excellent dispatcher. As you are aware, dispatching is not for everyone. To have a dispatcher reach this level of expertise is a very admirable and valuable asset to the department. Turnover in the dispatch office is constant and costly to any organization. To lose a dispatcher with this much experience would be devastating to the organization. Chaz knows what she did wrong and accepts responsibility for her actions. She will face sanctions within the organization. Chaz had surgery, which may have added to the tolerance of her alcohol. I've seen many changes in the positive for Chaz. I think this incident gave her a chance to re-examine her whole life and what this job means, not only to Chaz, but to her family, both blood family and the department family. Her family sees her as someone who they look up to. As for her department family, I think taking that away from her would be devastating to her and our organization. Chaz has made many changes to her life. Chaz has made giant strides to improve every aspect of her life, both physically and spiritually. I would hope that there is compassion and consideration for her situation as an individual. Chaz has realized what she has done and the impacts that this has had not only on her, but how it affected her family and the organization. She is truly remorseful for her actions. I make this request not only as her manager, but a friend and coworker. I feel the consequences that she has endured so far have caused Chaz to make significant changes to her family, career, and self. I would ask that she be allowed the opportunity to continue to serve as a role model to her family and assets to her department and the community, that she continues to make an impact. Sincerely, Chris Dunn, dispatch manager. And finally, the letter from Sheriff Winder, which you should have a copy of. I want to read a couple excerpts. After her DUI, Chaz has been a model employee. All of her performance evaluations since the DUI have been very positive, and she has clearly met the expectations of the department. One statement from a supervisor reads, Chaz is a pleasure to work with, is punctual, and an asset to the office. This supervisor also states that she has never received a complaint from a citizen or officer regarding Chaz. I have personally met with Chaz and want to express her deepest regrets. She has repeatedly apologized for putting the department in such a position. She told me she has cooperated fully with the post investigator and has never had any intention otherwise. We value her as a member of our department. She's a tremendous dispatcher to the point where she has been asked and encouraged to be a trainer for new and existing dispatchers. We respectfully ask this council to consider the comments as mitigating factors when making a decision regarding the future of dispatcher Chastity Corona. Sincerely, Sheriff Winder. As we've explained, Chastity has been an excellent dispatcher. Yes, she made a mistake. She has changed her life. It has severely impacted the way she thinks about her job. Every aspect of her life, from her job to her personal life to her spiritual life to her health and welfare of her life. We ask that you take into consideration the these letters, the chain of command from UPD. They want to keep her as a dispatcher. And we understand that you're tasked with disciplining these officers, but keep in mind, over the past 2 years, she's been an excellent dispatcher. With that, we ask for leniency, and if you have any questions at all, I'm happy to answer them as is Chastity.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thorne. Any questions for Mr. Thorne or Ms. Corona from the council? Okay, Mr. Chair. Bolander, I'll bring
yeah,
it back
just,
to you.
Just three quick points. The first one is, again, the reason why Post recommends a 18-month suspension here is, keep in mind, again, there were two violations. There was a DUI, and then there was the bottle of alcoholic beverage with the seal broken found in the car. This speeding charge, no, not for purposes of Post. We did not have an allegation about the speeding. I mean, that was part of the criminal thing, but that charge was dismissed.
The only charge that stood was the DUI.
All right. Hold on, Mr. Thorne. Nobody interrupted you, so I'll give you.
Okay, the next point I just wanted to bring up was one of the concerns Post had with this case was her breath test result was a 0.151, which, while isn't quite double, is pretty close. I know that was a concern with Post with how high that test result was. And then just one last point, as far as this council not having disciplined any dispatchers before, I don't recall off the top of my head what we've specifically disciplined other dispatchers for, but keep in mind, I just refer you to Utah Code 53-6-309, which is basically the same section as the disciplinary proceedings for law enforcement officers. It's basically identical. And so not only does the council have authority to do that, but my understanding is we have disciplined dispatchers before. It's not often, but it has been done.
All right, Mr. Bolander, any questions? Sheriff Edmonds?
I believe what the counselor said was that this body has never disciplined a dispatcher for DUI. Is that not correct?
Yeah, that's how I heard it.
We're looking at that right now.
Any estimate how long it'll take, Director?
We can't hear the what's being said.
Sheriff Edmonds made a clarification based on what he heard you say that the Post Council had never disciplined a dispatcher for a DUI violation. Although Post has...
That was our understanding.
But the council has disciplined dispatchers in the past for other violations. Post staff's verifying that information at this time.
Yes.
All right. I've just been informed that it's going to take a few minutes for the Post staff to research the records to see if the council has ever disciplined a dispatcher for DUI. So at this time, if there are no other questions or objections from the council, I'd like to hold this case until we have that information presented to us later in this meeting and move forward with the other disciplinary hearings. Mr. Thorne, did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
All right, sir. Okay, this time I'm going to turn the time over to Mr. Yockey for a presentation of the other disciplinary matters.
Council members, the next matter before us is the matter of the certification of Brandon Hawes. Mr. Hawes is a former member of the St. George Police Department. The sustained allegations were dealing harmful material to a minor and obstruction of justice. This falls under Category A of the Post Disciplinary Council guidelines, and Post recommended discipline action is revocation. Following is a summary of the facts. On November 16, 2012, it was discovered that school resource officer Brandon Hawes was exchanging photos, videos, and text messages of a sexual nature with a 17-year-old male student. At least two of the photos sent by Hawes would be considered material harmful to a minor. Haas also instructed the student to delete their conversations and photos. Charges were subsequently filed against Haas, who pled no contest to one count of obstruction of justice, a Class A misdemeanor. On January 21st, 2014, Haas waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Is Mr. Haas or a representative for Mr. Haas here that would like to address the council? Thank you, Chief Stratton.
Council, Lindsay Jarvis appearing with Mr. Haas, who is present today. What we wanted to, the reason that we actually waived the hearing is because the reality is the facts on this case, they are what they are. My client was working as a school resource officer, and during that time, he befriended a student who was involved in a similar situation. If any of you have ever lost a parent at a young age, it's easy to realize the loss that results in for the rest of your life. Mr. Haas lost his father at 4 years old. This particular student had lost his father in a car accident. As a result of that, Mr. Haas, with his position, attempted to act as a big brother or a mentor to this particular student. And in the process of that, began exchanging text messages, began communicating with him on social media sites such as Facebook and Twitter. And during the course of that interaction, the interaction became inappropriate, quite frankly. It's been determined that none of these were sexual in nature in the fact that Mr. Haas was not trying to develop a relationship with this particular child or this 17-year-old boy. In fact, the investigation from the police department during their internal affairs investigation was very strongly alluding to the fact that that was the situation. Mr. Haas underwent a voice stress analysis test, which he passed, indicating that there was, in fact, no sexual relationship. He's since undergone a psychosexual as part of his criminal conviction with this case. That also is indicative of not having an interest in a sexual relationship with this particular minor. The reality is he was involved as a school resource officer. He started acting like a teenager. Teenagers pass these types of things around, and although we're not trying to downplay it, that's what he did. He knows he screwed up. He understands that he needs to face the consequences. One of the things that I wanted to at least tell you is a little bit about Mr. Haas. From the paperwork that you've received, and quite frankly from the documents that I reviewed initially, I didn't want anything to do with this case. I met Mr. Haas, and he's a good guy. At 17 years old, started working with the local police departments. He had 700 hours of community service, doing ride-alongs, looking at police reports, trying to involve himself with police departments with the ultimate goal of being a police officer. He's a service-oriented individual. He's been a volunteer firefighter, an EMT. He was a dispatcher. He was actually dispatcher of the year. At his police academy graduation, he was the speaker for doing the best in his class. During his time with the St. George Police Department, he actually received two life-saving awards, one where a child was struck by lightning and another one where a girl was dealing with a congenital heart defect. He was the first to arrive to the scene. Quite frankly, I think what happened here is that he got caught up in the service. He was trying to help this kid, and he was relating to him on a different level. And the paperwork that you've received and, quite frankly, the facts that we stipulated to are the bare minimum. I would hope that there would be some questions asked about the nature of the actual text and the communications because they can be explained. And although it's certainly not going to do away with the charges, they are mitigating in nature. But I'll allow Mr. Haas to answer those questions.
Thank you, Ms. Jarvis.
First off, I'd like to apologize for my lowered values and lowered ethics to bring you guys to extend this meeting here today. As she said, I have lived my entire career or lived my entire life in order to be a police officer, not involved with drugs or alcohol, based on service issues from the time I was 13 all the way up until the time of my resignation. I'm not here to have a pity party. I don't want to tell you how this has affected me. I want to be able to come here and take accountability for what I did. I will say that I don't believe that it meets the standard of revocation. Maybe as you see it in that information on those papers, like I said, I do wish to answer any questions that you may have and be able to go from there. But again, I'm not here to tell you how it's affected my life because I would have a list longer than my arm. So,
all right, Mr. Haas. Questions from counsel?
I've got one. So when you signed the waiver, you admitted to the information that we're reading is correct?
Correct.
And your attorney up there talks about how you were trying to mentor these kids?
Correct.
So is it correct that you were lying in bed with what appeared to be an erection that you showed to these children, these kids? And also, let me finish. Posing naked in front of a mirror with your genitalia tucked between your legs? And students' genitalia was visible as well?
Okay, that's why I would hope for the questions, because obviously you have what's on that paperwork. That's not what the case was. The pictures weren't specifically of me. It was a reference back from a Twitter account.
Whoever says that this was correct?
Sure.
Okay, that was my question.
Is that how it states that it's me, or there was a picture in there sent by me?
It does say on another photo sent to the student was of four males standing in front of a mirror. So it was not of the respondent.
So one photo Haas sent to the student was of Haas lying in bed under covers with what appeared to be an erection or simulated erection?
If I could, there's actually three allegations. The first allegation is one photo that was transferred from a Twitter account to this individual's cell phone. In the Twitter account, which was something that was obviously put out on social media, it was four individuals standing in the mirror with their genitalia tucked between their legs, and there was a joke made about these appear to be students from another neighboring school. So Mr. Haas was not in that picture. Mr. Haas was not demonstrating anything. He simply forwarded what was on Twitter to this young man. The
first one, was that correct, though?
The other one, the allegation is that he was lying in bed and a picture was taken. Mr. Haas sent it. It was a remote control. There was a picture. It was a selfie, as people like to call them. That was sent out to numerous individuals, most of whom were adults. I believe during post-investigation, and Ms. Sergeant Lucas can correct this, but that one was sent, and it was sent in error to this individual. The third allegation is it was a video sent from the juvenile where he thought that it was funny with a bunch of his friends to put baby powder on his butt and fart, and that was the nature of the video. But during the course of that video, you could actually see part of his genitalia, and that's the reason why they're denoted as sexual in nature. However, they're not indicative of a sexual relationship.
Thank you.
Any other questions from counsel for Ms. Jarvis or Mr. Haas? All right, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the counsel for a motion.
Make a motion to accept.
Sorry?
I'll make a motion to accept post recommendation.
All right, a motion by Chief Carpenter, seconded by Sheriff Edmonds. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes.
Thank you, counsel.
All right, we're now going to return to the Corona matter. Mr. Bolander will be returning to the podium.
So the post staff was able to do some quick research, and our records can only go, we can only go back to the year 2010 to look over our records. We have investigated a dispatcher for a DUI, but however, certification lapsed during the investigation time, and so post took no action on her. We currently have another three that are currently under investigation right now that are dispatchers, but not for DUIs.
So just for clarification, the council has never disciplined a dispatcher for DUI?
Based as far going back as far as 2010, yes.
All right. Mr. Thorne, did you hear this conversation?
I did, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bolander. I'll bring it back to council for discussion or a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I ask a question from
Colonel Fuhrer.
2000, March of 2013 was when the case was finalized. If there was a year suspension, would that year suspension take place from 2000? When would the suspension take place?
She's still employed. So it would be the day this council takes action.
Would any of her time off be considered for that, the disciplinary time off?
That's up to this body to determine whether they want to recognize that time served.
Mr. Thorne, did you hear those questions?
I couldn't hear those questions, sorry.
Okay. Colonel Feuer, do you want to restate your question a little louder, please?
Yes, I was just asking when the suspension would take place from the time that this council makes this decision, if that would have taken place back a year ago or if it would take place as of today.
And the answer to that question, Mr. Thorne?
I think what you're asking is when our discipline took place, and I believe that was back in 2012.
No, the question was yes. And now it's up. And the second question was, would the discipline imposed by UPD be considered by the council? And that question is yes, it can be. Chief Carpenter?
Did she receive any time off specific to this violation? And how long was that?
Originally, they had issued her a notice of 176 hours of discipline, which is the maximum amount. But after Sheriff Winder met with Ms. Corona and discussed the matter and took into consideration all of the circumstances, they decided to not impose that discipline and allowed her to return to work.
So there was no discipline imposed, is that correct?
I believe that's correct.
All right. Sheriff Edmonds?
As Mr. Thorne astutely pointed out, regardless of what this body decides to do with this case, if UPD wants to employ her as a dispatcher, they have it within their ability to do that. All they have to do is change their policy if they want to keep her.
That's correct. Any other questions?
Can I address that statement?
Sure, go ahead, Mr. Thorne.
We have addressed this with UPD about their policy, and that's because they have this policy, they're not willing to retract this policy. They would like to keep her on as a dispatcher, but they just can't make an exception based on, you know, one dispatcher and revoke this policy.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Thorne. Mr. Connolly.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion with three letters of recommendation for her as mitigating circumstances, reduce it back to a one-year suspension from the aggravating factor of 18 months.
Okay, we have a motion to reduce the sanction from 18 months to 12 months.
This is three letters from workers.
Okay.
Mr. Chair? She didn't have the time off.
She had no time off. Okay, do we have a second to the motion? Okay, the motion dies for lack of a second. Do we have a second motion from the council? Sheriff Edmonds.
I move to accept post recommendation.
Sheriff Edmonds moves to accept post recommendation. Do we have a second? Colonel Feuer, discussion on the motion. Mr. Wallentine.
I would just observe that as we enter into this question of disciplining dispatchers, when the comment was made this morning at a separate meeting that disciplining dispatchers may not impose significant additional restriction on post resources, the fact of the matter is, as Sheriff Edmonds points out, individual agencies make that determination, not post council in it. There's a change in statute, then I think we're in a whole different ballpark, and it may well be that we see more dispatchers here. So I'm not particularly persuaded one way or the other by the lack of prior discipline for a dispatcher. What I am persuaded by, and I didn't hear Sheriff Edmonds say this, but I suspect that Sheriff Edmonds also, I'll speak for him, but there is some significant merit in consistency, and I think the motion is consistent with past practice.
Thank you, Chief Wallentine. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Yonke, would you present the next case, please?
For the length of period?
I'm sorry. The motion was to accept the post-recommendation of an 18-month suspension. That motion was seconded and voted with all in favor. There were no dissensions.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Council members, the next matter before us is the certification of William M. Barney, former member of the Utah County Sheriff's Office. The sustained allegations are custodial sexual misconduct, which falls in the category A, and the post-recommended discipline is revocation. The summary of the facts are as follows. On October 15, 2012, William Barney was interviewed by his agency concerning allegations of custodial sexual misconduct. During the Garrity interview, Barney admitted to having a sexual relationship with a female who was on probation. A local police department conducted a criminal investigation. However, the prosecutor declined to file criminal charges. William Barney failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and on December 12, 2013, an order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Barney.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Yockey. Is Mr. Barney or a representative here that would like to address the council? All right, I'll bring it back to the council for a discussion or a motion.
Motion to accept.
I have a motion to accept by Mr. Connolly. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Cook. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Yockey.
The next matter is the certification of Rick B. Golding. The sustained allegations are sexual conduct while on duty, which falls into category B of the post-council disciplinary guidelines. The post-recommended discipline is 3-year suspension. Summary of the facts are as follows. On September 25, 2010, Rick Golding met a female while on duty. A relationship developed, which eventually turned into a sexual relationship, lasting approximately 2.5 years. During that time, there was one incident of sexual conduct while on duty. Golding, while working his regular patrol shift, parked his patrol vehicle at a parking lot, walked to the woman's condo, and engaged in sexual conduct. Rick Golding failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and on March 6, 2014, an order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Golding.
Thank you. Is Mr. Golding here, our representative? Thank you, Chief Stratton. All right, back to the council for a motion. Motion to accept by Colonel Fuhrer.
Second.
Second by Sheriff Smith. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
The next matter is the matter of Christopher Schoenfeld. He's a former member of the Summit County Sheriff's Office. The sustained allegations are willful falsification of information to obtain certification, which falls under category C of the post-disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommended discipline is 2-year suspension. In this matter, on December 14, 2012, Christopher Schoenfeld completed a post-application to attend post-basic training course. The application was compared to a previous application Schoenfeld completed on December 12, 2007. The application completed in 2007 made no mention of any past drug use. The application completed in 2012 indicated Schoenfeld had used marijuana, cocaine, and mushrooms, with his last use being in 2004. After an investigation, it was discovered Schoenfeld listed several conflicting dates of last drug usage on numerous applications to different police departments. On November 26, 2013, a hearing was held before the administrative law judge. The ALJ subsequently issued findings of facts and conclusions of law stating Schoenfeld violated Utah Code Annotated 536-211 Subsection 1A as outlined in the Notice of Agency Action.
Thank you, Mr. Yockey. Is Mr. Schoenfeld here, a representative? Okay, bring it back to council for a motion. Chief Carpenter, move to accept. Second. Sheriff Tracy, any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
And one abstain on that one.
One abstain, yes.
The next matter is the certification of Cash Miller, former member of the Garfield County Sheriff's Office. The sustained allegations are assault and domestic violence in the presence of a child, which falls under Category C of the disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommendation is 2-year suspension. On June 20th, 2013, Cash Miller and his wife were camping with their young children. After the children were asleep, Miller began to question his wife regarding her involvement with another man. Miller's wife admitted to being involved in a relationship. Miller became upset and struck his wife in the arm at least 3 times. This incident occurred inside a camping trailer where the children were sleeping. Miller was charged with and entered into a plea in abeyance to assault, a Class B misdemeanor. On March 6, 2014, Cash Miller waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Is Mr. Miller, our legal representative, here? All right, at this time, I'll bring it back to the council for discussion or motion.
A motion to accept.
Motion to accept by Director Cook.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Gibson. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
The next matter is the certification of Craig W. Brown. Mr. Brown is a current member of the Wayne County Sheriff's Office. The sustained allegations are driving under the influence of alcohol or driving under the influence while under the influence, which is a Category D. The post-recommend discipline is 18-month suspension. Summary of facts are as follows. On October 13, 2013, Craig W. Brown was arrested for driving under the influence of alcohol. Brown was the driver of a vehicle that struck a deer in the roadway. Brown performed the horizontal gaze nystagmus test, the sobriety test, and submitted to a portable breath test, both of which indicated he was impaired. After Brown's arrest, he submitted to an intoxicator test, which showed that he had the breath alcohol content of 0.178. Brown pled guilty to the amended charge of impaired driving, a Class B misdemeanor. On March 3, 2014, Craig W. Brown waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action. Brown's high breath alcohol content of 0.178 was considered as an aggravating factor in post-recommendation for the 18-month suspension.
Thank you, Mr. Yockey. Is Deputy Brown, our representative for Deputy Brown here? Sir?
Thank you for letting me come up here.
Please state your name for the record.
Oh, Craig W. Brown.
Thank you.
I have some handouts. Is that fine with you guys?
That's fine.
Okay, like I said, I'd like to thank you guys for the opportunity to be here today. I'd also like to thank Sheriff Kurt Taylor over there, driving from Wayne County, and my parents for representing me. This is a document I received from a therapist that I had to get an evaluation for my charge of the DUI. In 2014 through 2012, I had worked for reserve deputy for Wayne County with no actions, no disciplinary actions at all. And if you wouldn't mind changing the page to the diagnostic impression, I had a pretty rough go after there for a couple months. I went on a couple of traumatic scenes. I'm not I'm not saying it's anybody's fault but my own for, I mean, I had some pretty rough goes. If you'd like to read that, I can read it out. Craig's self-reported substance use pattern and history do not meet diagnostic criteria for alcohol dependence. And based on information gathered during his assessment, he does not appear to have an active addiction to alcohol or any other substance. However, Craig's substance use pattern and behavior do meet the diagnostic criteria for alcohol abuse. The significant difference between abuse and dependence is that with abuse, a substance is used in a manner in which negative consequences are experienced in one or more life areas, but the individual is not psychologically and or psychologically dependent upon consumption of the substance. Whereas with dependence, the individual becomes psychologically and or physically dependent upon the consumption of the substance. Dependence is much more difficult to treat and poor long-term outcomes. Additionally, Craig reported experiencing several significant psychological traumas over the past 5 months without subsequent mental health interventions. The first experience occurred in July 12th when he responded to an auto accident where two elderly people were lying dead in the road and their bodies were completely engulfed in flames. He reports having had intrusive thoughts, nightmares, and an aversion of the smell of cooked chicken, which triggers the thoughts and event recalls. He reports ongoing symptoms with some inner episode relief since the incident. The second experience occurred the day following the first, the very next day. Craig reports being dispatched to recover the body of a climber who had been killed near Hanksville. He states the incident was less psychologically impactful than the motorcycle fatalities, but reports it served to intensify the trauma of the previous day. He states he spiraled into a dark and depressive place for the next several weeks, wherein he became sad, tearful, depressed, apathetic, struggled to go to work, become cynical, and negative in his presentation of life and lacked hope. He reports he was gradually able to control the symptoms enough to function normal vocationally. The third experience happened on September 6, a month prior to the night of my incident. Craig reports he was dispatched to a possible stabbing in Lyman involving three Hispanic males. He states the scene was chaotic, no backup was available, and his life was likely in danger. He reports he drew his weapon during the search of one of the men out of the fear for his own safety. The incident resolved without use of force. However, the anxiety and anticipation and possible deadly force incident unnerved him and set the stage for the most traumatic experience of that evening. Craig reports a short time after that, which would be about an hour and 45 minutes after this incident, I was patrolling the rest of my night shift in Torrey and observed my wife's truck parked at a local bar. I stopped to talk to her and found the vehicle in the next with her and another man having sex. He states he left the scene, went home, and had an emotional breakdown. He called a fellow deputy to his home to assist him with management of the immediate trauma. As a result of several unresolved traumas occurring in a relatively short time frame and Craig's psychological and behavioral responses since, his system meets the diagnostics criteria for post-traumatic stress disorder. While the presence of PTSD does not excuse what I have done leading up to his arrest, it is a mitigating factor and should be taken into consideration. PTSD is a difficult disorder to cope with, especially in the absence of mental health support. And like I say, I'm not blaming anybody for my actions. I took full responsibility. Everything without a lawyer, I knew I was guilty. I pled my case, and if there's any questions, I thank you.
All right, thank you, Deputy Brown. Are there any questions for Deputy Brown from members of the council? Dr. Checkitz.
Are you currently receiving any kind of substance abuse treatment or mental health treatment?
Yes, I am. I am with a counselor and a therapist in Wayne County.
Do you continue to consume alcohol?
No.
Professor Morin, do you have a question, comment? No. Any other questions? Thank you, Deputy Brown. I'll bring you back to the council. Any further discussion? Do we have a motion?
Motion to accept.
Chief Carpenter, motion to accept.
Second.
Second by Officer Connolly. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
Are there any opposed?
I am.
Okay, Ms. Morin opposed. Okay, Mr. Yockey, next case.
The next matter is the certification of Randall Scott Hall, former member of the Utah Department of Corrections. The sustained allegations are theft and disorderly conduct, which provides a category D and F for the post-disciplinary guidelines. The post-recommended discipline is 15-month suspension. Summary of the facts are as follows. On January 26, 2013, Correctional Officer Scott Hall and three other officers attended a party in connection with their secondary employment security assignments. During the party, Hall broke into a locked storage room where Hall and the other officers removed a bottle of liquor for themselves. The theft was discovered after a routine inventory and confirmed via security cameras. When confronted about the missing liquor, Hall and the other three officers admitted to the theft and returned the bottles. On February 22, 2013, Hall resigned from his department. During the post-investigation, an unrelated disorderly conduct conviction from 2009 was discovered. Hall admitted to pleading guilty to the Class C misdemeanor and entered into a diversion agreement. On March 13, 2014, Hall waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Mr. Hall here, a representative for Mr. Hall. Okay, I'll bring it back to the council for discussion and a motion. Chief Wallentine.
I have a question. Do we have a motion?
We do not have a motion.
Okay, well, may I ask a question of staff first? What we had the co-workers involved in this situation either last time or
it was last time.
Okay, what was the recommendation? What was imposed? I know I can look at the minutes, but I know you remember. Okay, Dr. Bud will tell me.
One year. Right. The 1 year is for that particular incident. The 3 months is for the 2009 incident.
Oh, for the disorderly conduct.
I would make a motion to accept the recommendation staff.
Second. Okay, we have a motion by Chief Wallentine and second by Commissioner Gibson. Was that you, sir?
It was me.
No, Dr. Bud. Any discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair, I recuse.
Okay, Director Cook will recuse himself. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes.
The next matter is the certification of Nathan N. Brimhall. He's a former member of the Springville Police Department. The sustained allegations are falsifying government records, category D. The post-recommended discipline is 1 year suspension. On July 28, 2013, Nathan N. Brimhall was dispatched to a hit-and-run traffic accident possibly involving an impaired driver. Brimhall located the subject, arrested him for a warrant, and booked him into jail. Brimhall later told his supervisor he conducted a standardized field sobriety test while at the jail. Brimhall stated he did not charge the subject with driving under the influence, as his observation showed the subject was not impaired. Brimhall did not document the sobriety test on his initial report and was instructed by his supervisor to complete a supplemental report. Brimhall completed the supplemental report indicating he conducted sobriety tests inside the jail. However, an internal investigation by his department disclosed Brimhall did not conduct the sobriety test, falsified his supplemental report, and lied to the supervisor. After the internal investigation, Brimhall resigned from the department. Brimhall was not charged criminally. On February 22, 2014, Brimhall waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Was Officer Brimhall ever given a Garrity warning in this case? Did it reach that point in an IA?
May I confer with my investigators?
Yes. Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I found it.
Based on my council members, based on my investigator's report, yes, Garrity was given, provided by both his agency and by POST.
And he was truthful under Garrity?
That is not one of the issues that was brought up, not okay. One of the charges that was addressed.
All right. Is Mr. Brimhall a representative for Mr. Brimhall here? Okay, I'll bring it back to the council. Any discussion on the matter? Do we have a motion?
Second.
Motion by Sheriff Tracy to accept the recommendation, and seconded by Chief Stratton. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, Mr. Yockey.
The next matter is a certification of John Gardner. He's a former member of the Utah Highway Patrol. As you recall, council members, this was the matter that was brought up last council. Just to summarize it again, the sustained allegations are driving while ability impaired with alcohol, which is a Colorado, under the Colorado statute, it's a category D under the post-disciplinary guidelines, and the post-recommended discipline is 1 year suspension. On August 21st, 2011, John Gardner was stopped by a law enforcement officer for speeding while riding his motorcycle in Colorado. After smelling the odor of alcohol, the Colorado officer had Gardner perform standardized field sobriety tests and perform a breath sample for a portable breath test unit. The results of the PBT indicated a blood alcohol concentration of 0.067. Gardner was arrested and transported to a hospital where he voluntarily provided a blood sample for analysis. The result of the blood alcohol content a blood alcohol content of 0.073. Gardner was subsequently cited for driving while impaired by alcohol and speeding. Gardner subsequently pled guilty to reckless driving. On December 6, 2013, Post Council had an opportunity to review the facts and allegations contained in the notice of agency action. Council remanded the case back to investigation for additional follow-up. A follow-up investigation was conducted and which produced no additional findings. John Gardner failed to respond to the notice of agency action. On November 20th, 2013, an order of default was signed by the administrative law judge and mailed to Gardner.
Is Mr. Gardner, a representative for Mr. Gardner, here today? Okay, bring it back to the council for any discussion. Chief Wallentine?
I make a motion to accept and a comment and commend the investigator in this case for following up quite diligently.
All right. Motion to accept by Chief Wallentine. Do we have a second?
Second.
Second by Chief Carpenter. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Any opposed? Colonel Fuhrer will recuse himself. Go ahead, Mr. Yockey.
Next matter is a certification of Maquette Morgan. She's a dispatcher with the Department of Public Safety. Sustained allegations are domestic violence assault, which is category C under the post-council disciplinary guidelines. Post-recommend discipline is 9-month suspension. The facts are as follows. The summary of facts are as follows. On March 22, 2013, Maquette Morgan was involved in a domestic incident with her ex-husband. During the argument, Morgan slapped her ex-husband across the face. A local police agency responded at the request of the ex-husband. Morgan was cited for domestic violence assault and released. The county attorney reviewed the incident and filed charges for disorderly conduct and infraction. Morgan pled guilty to the charge and was placed on a 3-month diversion agreement. On February 13, 2014, Maquette Morgan waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Is Dispatcher Morgan here? Moran? I'm sorry, Morgan. Miss, would you like to address the council? Please state your name for the record.
Maquette Morgan.
Thank you.
I'm here today to tell you how sorry I am for my actions. If my license is suspended, I don't have a job, and I'm a single mom with a special needs son. I know what I did was completely wrong and uncalled for, but that day my ex-husband came into my house, and he started hitting himself in the face and blaming it on me. I asked him to leave, and he did, but he was waiting outside for the kids because he was there to get them for the weekend. So I walked him outside and told him goodbye, and he said, "I hope you have fun starting your car." Well, before he left my house, he stole my keys. So I went back in to see if he had them. He followed me back in. He's screaming at me, calling me filthy, dirty names, pointing his finger right in my face and spitting on me and telling me I was never going to see my kids again. I just reacted. I slapped him. It got him to calm down, and he left. But there's still no reasons for my actions, and I'm just here to apologize and... I can say, really.
Okay, are there any questions?
Can I just say one more thing, though?
Yes,
sorry.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Since that episode, me and my ex-husband have calmed down. We can talk casually. He's moved on. We knew that we let our emotions get the best of us. I just left an 18-year marriage, and it was just a difficult time, but we both learned a really big lesson from this.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Morgan? Thank you, Ms. Morgan. Okay, I'll bring it back to the council for discussion or a motion. Sheriff Edmonds.
I'm going to make a motion, and my motion is that we reject the post recommendation and that I make the motion that we give her a letter of caution. The reason why I say that is because I think Ms. Morgan was victimized here. After investigating literally hundreds of domestic situations like the one that is outlined in this particular case, and after listening to her testimony, it's clear to me that her ex-husband was trying to get her to do exactly what she did. And I feel very strongly that she did not do anything wrong. I reject her apology because I don't think she needs to give one, personally. That's my motion.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to reject post recommendation and replace it with a letter of caution. Is that correct, Sheriff?
Yes, sir.
A second by Chief Wallentine. Colonel Fuel will recuse himself. Is there any additional discussion on the matter? Okay, a call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. The 9-month suspension will be vacated, replaced with a letter of caution. Mr. Yockey, next case, please.
The next matter is a certification of Brian Kirby, officer with the Sunset Police Department. Sustained allegations of criminal trespassing, which is a Category E under the post-council disciplinary guidelines. The recommendation is a 3-month suspension. On July 15, 2012, Brian Kirby went to the residence of his ex-wife to retrieve some boating equipment. Kirby was accompanied by his 2 children, whose custody he shares with his ex-wife. Kirby and the children began removing items from the garage, at which time the ex-wife exited the residence and confronted them. After a brief verbal exchange, the ex-wife called the police, and Kirby left with the children. The ex-wife filed a complaint, a criminal complaint, with the local police because Kirby had never lived at the residence and had no legal standing at the residence. Kirby pled guilty to a charge of criminal trespassing, a Class C misdemeanor. On March 4th, 2014, Brian Kirby waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you, Mr. Yockey. Is Officer Kirby or representative for Officer Kirby here? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the council for discussion or a motion. Motion by Colonel Feuer to accept, seconded by Commissioner Gibson. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you, Mr. Yockey.
The next matter before the council is the certification of Anita Bench, officer with the South Salt Lake Police Department. The sustained allegations are a BCI violation, which is category E under the post-disciplinary guidelines, and the post-recommended discipline is a letter of caution. On or about December 11th, 2012, information provided during an unrelated internal affairs investigation alleged officers were checking the driver's license file of a fictitious person for non-law enforcement purposes. A database audit revealed Anita Bench conducted an unauthorized inquiry into the driver's license database on October 19th, 2012. During Garrity interviews with both her department and post, Bench admitted to accessing the fictitious undercover identification for another officer within the department. Bench stated the record was accessed to look at the photo. Bench never completed the inquiry and only pulled up the name list. BCI did not wish to file any charges, and the local city prosecutor declined to file charges. Bench was given a written reprimand by her department. On February 12th, 2014, Bench waived her right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Yockey? Is Officer Bench here today? Would you like to address the council? Please state your name for the record.
Anita Bench.
Thank you.
I'm just here because I want, if there was any additional questions, and also I just wanted to say that at the time that I was going to access the photo of with the fictitious name, that I should have realized that it was a BCI violation, and I'm here to take responsibility for it.
All right, thank you. Council, any questions for Officer Bench? No? Anything else, Officer Bench, you'd like to say? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Bring the matter back to the council for discussion. Any discussion? Motion?
Motion to accept.
Mr. Conley moved to accept the post recommendation, seconded by Sheriff Smith. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you, Officer Bench.
Council members, the final matter before the council is a certification of Eric R. Jensen, a peace officer with the South Salt Lake Police Department. The sustained allegations is a BCI violation, which is category E under the post-disciplinary guidelines, and the post-recommended discipline is a letter of caution. Similar to the previous facts, on or about December 11, 2012, information provided during an unrelated internal affairs investigation alleged officers were checking the driver's license file of a fictitious person for non-law enforcement purposes. A database audit revealed Eric Jensen had conducted an unauthorized inquiry on several occasions. During Garrity interviews with both his department and post, Jensen explained the driver's license he was checking was a fictitious one he had created for his undercover identification. Jensen admitted to accessing the information for training purposes as well as for its comedic value. Jensen was given a written reprimand by his department, BCI, and the local police city prosecutor declined to file charges. On February 1st, 2014, Jensen waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge and stipulated to the facts as contained in the notice of agency action.
Thank you. Is Officer Jensen here? Would you like to address the council?
Members of the council, I appreciate the opportunity.
State your name for the record, please.
Eric R. Jensen.
Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity to stand before you. I recognize the error of my actions, knowing that the fictitious identification that I created myself for my undercover identity, I apologize that I did that, and I recognize now that by doing that it was a violation. I've been cooperative, therefore, with the investigators, and again, I apologize to Detective Bench who for creating a comedic ID that was an interest to other detectives. So I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Any questions for Officer Bench?
Thank
you. I'm sorry?
Officer Jensen.
Officer Jensen, sorry.
That's okay.
I'm like Ken, a little old. Thank you, Officer Jensen.
Thank you.
Okay, bring it back to the council. Any discussion on the matter? Okay, do we have a motion?
No.
Motion to accept by Chief Valentine.
Second.
Second by Chief or Sheriff Tracy. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, at this time I'm going to turn the time back over to Director Stevenson, who's going to discuss a proposal for the dissemination of post material for future meetings.
Thank you, Chair. In the past, even for this meeting, we kill trees and mail out these huge packets with all this information. Staff and I were discussing a more efficient way to get this information to you. And we came up with an idea of putting it on the post council and creating a post council portal. It's the last page in your packet. This will afford you the opportunity to go online and look at the agenda, the pending approval of minutes, and contact information, next information about the next council meeting. But essentially, we're going to push all the information to this portal that you can access. That way, you don't have to wait for a packet from our office. We're going to send you a username and password, so be anticipating that so that you can access the information. And if you have any questions, please contact Jamie Garn at the information we provided on the paper. Any questions regarding that? Any concerns about pushing that information onto our portal?
I think it's a good idea, Director. It'll get the information out to us in a more timely manner and reduce the amount of time that your staff takes in preparing these documents for us.
Ms. McCleave will be very, be very appreciative of that, yes. I'm sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to point out that a member of the Post Council will be leaving shortly. This is his last meeting, and I wanted to take this opportunity, as did Director Stevenson, to personally thank Chief Valentine from the Attorney General's office for his service not only on the Post Council, but for the many, many years of excellent law enforcement support that he and his office has provided to agencies throughout this state, and for the personal friendship that Ken extends to everybody. He will be truly a difficult man to replace, and while he keeps pointing out to me that he's not going far away, I reminded him today that he already dressed down like a Californian and came to post council meeting without a tie. So, but Ken, you truly will be missed, even though you're not far away. We'll miss your wisdom and your guidance on matters, and thank you for your service to the post council and to the people of the state of Utah. Director Stevenson.
Hey, Chief, I just want to thank you for your 75 years of service to law enforcement. No, on a serious note.
Wow.
I've always gone to Ken. He is a well that is very deep. And I, for everything from personnel, you name it, I've gone to Ken. I have a lot of confidence in his opinion, and he's a good friend and brother. And
and I wish you all the luck. I know you're not going to be far away physically, but just the fact that you're leaving our profession is too far for me. But I wish you luck, and I know you're going to do well and have a great time. And please keep in touch with us.
Well, I would just point out that my family got into business in 1867, but it was my great-great-grandpa, not me. I haven't been around 75 years. I might be. Thank you.
Okay, that brings us to our second to the last agenda item, and that is to schedule the next meeting. Director Stevenson?
We usually do it the first part of June. Let's pull up our calendars.
I think in a act of appreciation to the Post Council that perhaps Chief Wallentime should host it at his new office in Laguna Niguel and pay all expenses for the council to come down.
That would require me to get approval from the commissioner to tap into his budget.
No. Have
you know what
Chief Wallentine.
See if my expense account is yet. But you know, Chief Keefe, my replacement's here. We can introduce him and ask him if his account.
No.
Hey, if I could, will you stand up for me? This is Spencer Austin. He is the Chief Criminal Deputy with the Attorney General's Office. He will be sitting in place of the AG from here on out on the council. I've had an opportunity to interact with him quite a bit, and a good man, and will be a good addition to the council. So, welcome.
Sorry about the lag of Laguna to yell through, but I tried.
Thanks for the effort, Ken.
How does June 10th. Look, it's Tuesday.
I have to be in Colorado for a HIDA meeting.
When will you be back?
Late that afternoon.
June 11th at Post. 10 o'clock. Going once, going twice. Sold, Chief Carpenter. Okay, Wednesday the 11th at 10 o'clock. At Post.
All right, are there any items that any member of the council would like to bring up before we adjourn? Seeing none, we'll take a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Sheriff. Second? Oh, we had plenty of those. Okay, this standing adjournment until June the 11th. Thank you.
Thank you, council.